Hello and welcome to La Cosa Nostra. I'm Edward.
I'm Noah.
And today we'll be covering Milos Forman's 1999 Man on the Moon, starring Jim Carrey, Danny DeVito and Paul Giamatti.
Yes, this was Carrey's second more serious role after The Truman Show came straight after. And so when was the first time you saw this movie?
About 2 days ago.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you never heard of it? Or?
Well, not really. I wasn't really aware of it that much. I mean, I think I knew it existed, but it never really occurred to me to be something of like a masterpiece or anything.
Yeah, I'd always heard of this movie. There was like this serious Jim Carrey movie. And I was like, huh, Man on the Moon, what an interesting movie. I didn't think much of it. And then I think I watched a video on the documentary Jim and Andy. And it talked, and that was all about the filming and production of Man on the Moon. So I watched Jim and Andy, and I really enjoyed that. And then one day I was like, okay, I'm just going to sit down, and I'm going to see if I enjoy Man on the Moon, because there are a lot of conflicting opinions if this movie is properly good or not. So what did you think of it?
I think, so a couple of things that came to mind is, one, I don't think it's a serious movie as such, in my opinion. I think it's quite it's a comedy for me, honestly. And then I think Carrey's performance is really good. I think the performances in general are really good.
Yeah.
And it has the kind of energy of kind of Carrey's stand-up stuff, like before he was kind of well-versed Hollywood actor. That kind of energy that's present in like movies like Ace Ventura and those kind of absurdist comedy movies he does a little bit earlier in his career.
Yeah.
It has that energy, but it has an important story, I think, that needs to be told.
Yeah, the story with this movie, it's one of my major issues with it. The story was written by Scott Alexander and Larry Karasuski. And they've had an interesting history when it comes to writing movies. They started out writing the Problem Child movies, which are...
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, they started writing out the Problem Child movies, and they were like, okay, I want to get into doing more serious movies. So they did the Ed Wood. They would go on to do Tim Burton's Ed Wood, which I think that is one of the best biopics and one of the best movies I've ever seen. Then they do The People vs. Larry Flint. So they've really become the biopic guys that you go to. They did that. They did Big Eyes, another Tim Burton film. They did... My Name is Dolomite. Have you seen that? I've heard of it, yeah. Yeah, I think they also did The People vs. O.J. Simpson.
I
can't remember. So they were really the biopic writers. But with this movie, with this movie, it's really important if you try to find out who Andy Kaufman and his life was. So what did you think about the beginning of it? Because
I thought the first half of the movie was very good, and it had the cohesiveness as a story of many biopics where you could kind of follow it.
Yeah.
But I think towards the second half where he gets ill and then, you know, he starts down this trail of dying, it became really hard to follow and it just felt kind of bizarre.
Yeah, this movie isn't exactly accurate to the life of Andy Kaufman. So at the beginning of this movie, you have how he talks. I really like the actual intro of this movie. It's Jim Carrey doing... Andy Kaufman's foreign man character. And it's really funny how he just says, like, goodbye. and like, he starts playing the theme to Lassie. And then the theme is so short, he has to keep putting the record player on and off again. And then he just stops it. And then the movie just goes black for 12 seconds. And it's just like, that's the kind of thing that I really liked about Andy Kaufman. Like, they really understand how he would just troll the audience. And the audience would have no idea what's happening. But the thing with the beginning, the movie goes from the childhood to him doing like stand-up, stand-up comedy, which it just doesn't work for me. Because if you know the life of Andy Kaufman, after that, he would get, after being a child, he would get over his fear, his like insecurities by doing performances at children's birthday parties. He listed into the army, but after listing into the army, he failed like the psychiatric test. He would have a baby with his high school girlfriend, and he would give up that baby for adoption as well. and he would fall into drugs as well. And he got out of that by doing transcendental like meditation. And all of that happened between his childhood and doing stand-up. They don't even touch on that during this movie. And I'm like, that is such a missed opportunity where you could talk about all that stuff about him having to give up his child and like him failing to get into the army. That is so much interesting stuff that they get just gloss over. And yeah. What did you think of Danny DeVito in this movie?
I thought it was really good, but I felt the only issue with it is it's kind of Danny DeVito being the classic Danny DeVito character.
Yeah.
Where he's like the charismatic salesman, father figure.
The thing with Danny DeVito in this movie, he's good. It just does not make any sense. Because if you've seen the show Taxi that Andy Kaufman was on, Danny DeVito was on Taxi at the exact same time.
Was he?
Yes. He was one of the main cast members of Taxi with Andy Kaufman. And they never address it in this movie. They never address that he was on Taxi. It would be really funny if they just put like on the end credits, Danny DeVito as himself, like when they do the Taxi thing, but they never address that he was on Taxi. And it's just, what a wasted opportunity. I do not understand why they just wouldn't do that. So you've got that. And have you seen any Milos Forman like films?
No, I haven't.
Because he did, I could be wrong, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I could believe that. I
think, and he also did Amadeus as well.
So that's not supposed to be great, Amadeus.
No, Amadeus is apparently a really good film, like a properly really good film. So he has a really good track record. Yeah.
Amadeus.
The People vs. Larry Flynn, which he also did with Skye Alexander and Larry.
One Flew Over.
So like, he is really good. One Flew Over won the best picture back then. And I think Amadeus did as well.
Yep.
And this movie was like, most people thought it was going to be a contender for the Oscar race in 1999.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, I love this movie.
Because like, you know
it's interesting, but it's not an Oscar winning movie.
But you know biopics. You know, you make a biopic, the Oscar. It's the same thing with biopics and war movies. The Oscars love biopics and war movies, and they will give him a nomination. I'm not sure if he got nominations for anything.
He got 5 wins.
But do you know for any Oscars?
25. No Oscars.
No Oscar nominations.
And I can understand
which,
that.
Which, yeah, but have you seen 1999 in movies?
It's quite stacked.
1999 is crazy.
The boxes, The Matrix.
You've got, I think, American Beauty as well. I'd have to, I'm getting up a list now of all the movies that came out in 1999. What? Fight Club.
Yeah, but that was not successful. Fight Club wasn't successful.
You know, The Iron Giant, The Sixth Sense, The Mummy.
People it's just hated like, Fight Club when it first came out.
The Green Mile, Toy Story 2. Just like, how? Like, it is stacked that year, you know? Being John Malkovich, The Talented Mr. Ripley.
I don't think this could have won an Oscar, even if it was nominated. I think it's a brilliant, like, movie. But it's one of those things that's destined to become a cult classic.
Yeah, so have to talk about, like, with this movie and how it did, you have to kind of talk about like Jim Carrey before that. So you saw some of his stand-up.
He was quite... So what I've learned kind of about his career is he was very popular amongst like stand-up comedian yeah. like fans and like clubs and stuff.
Yeah.
Then he did a bit of TV, right?
Yeah, he had... They gave him this TV show called The Duck Factory.
Yeah.
And he played the straight man, you know, the normal guy in that. So it didn't really suit to him himself. And so that got cancelled after like 6 episodes or something. And then he would be in Francis Ford Coppola's Peggy Sue Got Married. And then he would be in Once Bitten. Then he was in Earth Girls Are Easy. Now in Earth Girls Are Easy, he met somebody called Damon Wayans. And Damon Wayans, they saw like the kind of acting he did, this kind of over the top kind of acting. And they were like, okay, this guy, he would be really good for this new TV show that we're making. It's In Living Color. It's so, like, so Jim Carrey gets his big break in Living Color. Have you ever seen it?
No.
I saw a few episodes. It's really funny. It's really dated. I'm not going to lie. There's a character on it called Handyman about a superhero who is handicapped. And it's definitely something. And what else? There's in one of the sketches.
Oh, this is the one where the Ice Spice sketch.
Yeah, like Jim Carrey's the imposter song is really funny. And then like there's a sketch where like there's two gay men. One of the gay men gets hit on the head and suddenly becomes straight. And it's just like, it's so 90s, but it really works. Yeah, Jamie Foxx, Jennifer Lopez got her start on this show as well. The whole Wayans family created this. He was the only white male cast member on it.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, because this movie was kind of groundbreaking because on SNL, most of the cast members were white. And then you have this come along where most of the cast members are black. It really just broke everything.
Got really good reviews.
Yeah, so it genuinely is a really good show. And he created characters like Fire Marshal Bill and that. And that's where, like, he was able to sign on in 1994 to be Ace Ventura. And then once Ace Ventura came out, everything just went, like...
crazy.
Boom. He did three movies in 1994, Ace Ventura, The Mask, and Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
Both, like, massively successful. And from there, he became, like, the biggest star in the world. So after that, he would do Batman Forever, then The Cable Guy, then Liar Liar. So that's kind of where he was at this time, where Jim Carrey could do whatever he wanted. And that gets us to talking about like his... did you read anything about his method acting in this movie?
No, I've been told about it, though. Basically was Andy Kaufman the whole time.
Yeah, from what he says that he was possessed. He was kind of like Andy Kaufman became part of him, and like he was part of his spirit and stuff. So Jim Carrey wasn't there, and it was Andy Kaufman who was acting through him. So if you watch Jim and Andy, that's why it's really important if you were to watch Jim and Andy, you get an understanding of like this guy was nuts on set. He would attack like cast members. He would just stall production. Just because he said that Andy Kaufman had taken over his body. And, like, you should probably find, like, some videos on it and stuff. And it is just, like... And these videos were withheld from the public for, like, 20 years? So nobody actually ever saw it, then they made the documentary. So... And have you seen any videos of Andy Kaufman?
No, I haven't really seen... I don't know much about Andy Kaufman, honestly.
Yeah, so if you see a few videos of Andy Kaufman and Jim Carrey in this movie, it is uncanny how close they are to being the exact same person.
Yeah.
Like, they are really they are genuinely really close. So it really begs the question if this guy was just trying to just do this for attention or if something genuinely happened to him where, like, he ended up just becoming a completely different person. But his performance in this movie is really good. What did you think of it?
I would say it's a phenomenal performance because he's able to kind of like harness his natural funniness as Jim Carrey and divert it in a different direction.
There's genuinely like the serious moments still really work.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, there is this really good groundedness to him. And the Elvis scene where he becomes Elvis.
That for me was really, really well done. But it did feel a lot like, you know, Jim Carrey obviously had experience in stand-up. And it felt a lot like one of his stand-up segments.
I know. He was very... Because
The 90s, he had a show called The Unusual Show.
That was...
which is his stand-up.
What's it called? The Unusual Actor?
Yeah, The Unusual Act. And he basically, for an hour or 2 hours, would like just... go absolutely mental on a stage, and you can feel that kind of like energy in this film,
which kind of doesn't properly work because Andy Kaufman, you watch his stuff, you can watch, there's a good video on YouTube if you can see the difference between, because you know when he does the tape where he has like the tape thing and he mouths the Mighty Mouse song where it goes like here I come to save the day, like he does that quite big, he has a really, like, when he mouths it, he does it really big.
Yeah.
The thing with Kaufman, he does that really small, really nervously, and it really feels a lot different, and Carrey doesn't... He says that he really understood Kaufman. I don't completely feel it, because, because they've put the audition tape online, and you can see that, and there's not much of a difference between his original audition tape and the acting that he actually ended up doing. So there's the thing, like, how much of Kaufman was really part of him, or was it really just for attention? That's what I'm thinking.
And, I'd say that his performance is, I think, if you were to do Kaufman and you made it just a Kaufman movie where the performance was 100% Andy Kaufman, it wouldn't translate very well to a almost 2-hour movie.
I know.
Because he's got this kind of quiet, like, not really that funny kind of, like, atmosphere to him.
But that's always been kind of the point, like...
Yeah, but they had to spring, they had to, you know, ramp it up a bit to make it, you know...
I know.
...interesting for a more general audience, especially considering Carrie's, like, success during this period. He had to kind of make this an interesting film.
Yeah, that's true. And this was the first time that... So, Man on the Moon came out late 1999. That was, like, 25th of December. And this was the first time my Jim Carrey movie didn't make any money. So every single movie up to that point, apparently the average was about $240 million the film would make. And that is incredible because that's for like 8 movies, not a single one bombs. And they're all averaging about $240 million. So apparently that is one of like the greatest stretches in like film history of making that much money. So Man on the Moon was the first time a Jim Carrey movie didn't make any money.
Yeah.
And, you know...
But it's got that, like... It's different. Saying, it's that cult classic.
Yeah, it's definitely a cult classic. And this won Jim Carrey the Golden Globe for Best Actor. Can't remember if it's for Best Drama or Best Comedy. But, yeah, this
probably
was...
Probably comedy.
Because Truman...
Considering they're making The Bear a comedy, I mean, they'd probably rightfully make this a comedy.
The Truman Show he won for Best Drama, I think. No, yeah, he won for Best Comedy. Truman Show was for Best Drama. So, yeah, this was his second Golden Globe. And once again, do you think it was fair that he got snubbed that year from the Oscars?
I wouldn't say it was a snub. I think his performance was really good, but it's not the kind of thing that translates to Oscars, I think.
No, because it is this. I'm not even gonna lie, this movie is Oscar bait. Like, Milos Forman directing a biopic, it should be like a slam dunk. That's what I'm thinking. So I'm kind of surprised they didn't get one. Like, for Best Actor.
But I prefer that he didn't win it here and then kind of use that sort of like pent up energiness to then win the Truman Show.
And no, Truman Show came the year before.
But then, yeah, then he's gonna sit on his laurels a bit and kind of, you know, like, I've won, I can take the bait off.
No, he didn't get nominated for Truman Show either.
Did he not?
No.
That's criminal.
He's never been nominated for an Oscar.
What?
Neither for Truman Show, not for Man on the Moon, not for Eternal Sunshine.
He should have won for Eternal Sunshine and Truman Show.
They just don't like Jim Carrey. The Oscars really don't like Jim Carrey.
But you can see the kind of Truman Show-ness translating to it. The scene where they try and cut him out and he gets into a fight on this Friday's
TV
show.
Yeah, on Fridays. That actually happened.
Yeah, but that kind of vibe, you can see that translating to his performance in Truman Show.
Yeah.
So it has that kind of like horror, like it's
And for Best Actor, the nominations were Denzel Washington for The Hurricane, Sean Penn for Sweet Low Down, Richard Farnsworth for The Straight Story, Russell Crowe for The Insider. And the person who won was Kevin Spacey for American Beauty.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough.
Personally, American Beauty was just like... Weinsteins just advocating... Because there is something definitely... Was it the Weinsteins or... Yeah, it says DreamWorks Pictures here. Because American Beauty just swept everything that year.
I mean, fair enough. It's one of the best movies like to be made in the top 60.
Definitely quite ironic saying everything that's happened after... But, like, I've never seen American Beauty. I don't know if it's really good or not. But do you think Milos Forman should have got, like, a nomination for Best Director?
The problem for me is usually a sign of a good director is when the story, even if the story's quite blocky, the movie flows really well. And I think this film has an issue with its flow. Where at times it has this kind of vibe that you get into. You know, like, you get into him being this, like, rebellious comedy guy with Tony Clifton as his, like, creative output.
Yeah,
and then it like switches it up and makes him this like meditative man who's like like going down on his
life. That's the thing,
and that's when I think the flow of the film is disrupted, and I think directorially that could have been done smoother.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, that's what I'm saying. They just cut things out of this movie where they didn't need to be cut out, because Andy Kaufman's life, as it was, is so interesting. so much interesting stuff happens. He even said that transcendental meditation was the reason that he was alive. That was the thing that saved him from the world of drugs. So seeing him do that meditation doesn't make as much sense, because they never really properly elaborate that that is the thing that keeps him going through all of it. So that's what you're saying, that like you're kind of confused by
Yeah, like why it matters to him so much. And then also he goes from like this really depressed streak, and then it just like jolts up to when he's all good again and he's like living with his girlfriend. And I think as a director, that could have been done a little bit better.
The cuts aren't great
The plot kind of jumps around a lot, and it's a bit it's like jarring almost. You go from this like really funny, then really sad, then back to really funny, like out of nowhere.
Yeah, and it's like,
it doesn't give you time to dwell on like the more serious aspects of his life.
Like, but there's something that this movie does. This movie, I love things that people say is a problem with this movie. You don't really understand who Andy Kaufman is more after seeing this. Did you have a better understanding of who Andy Kaufman was after seeing this, or were you still kind of confused?
Really. I mean, I think this movie kind of shows you, in my opinion, it's kind of like an alternate reality Jim Carrey, where like he was born a little bit earlier, and like,
this is probably who Jim Carrey would have
been. He wasn't like introduced to like funny comedy like early enough. And so you get this kind of like, it feels a lot like Jim Carrey doing like weirder and like more on drugs Jim Carrey.
I know, yeah, that's true. And it's that,
I think that's where, it's not his fault, like that's a good performance.
It is definitely a good performance.
I think the film is too much built around Carrey doing his like what he always does, which is like 110% in every movie.
Yeah, we don't learn that much more about Andy Kaufman, which kind of makes sense, because nobody really knows who Andy Kaufman really was.
I don't think Andy Kaufman knew who Andy Kaufman was.
No, he didn't know who he was. It is the kind of thing where like his entire life is kind of shrouded in mystery. So this movie kind of not telling us anything more about him kind of makes sense. But at the same time, you're kind of going to a biopic hoping that you might learn a bit more about this guy.
Yeah.
So yeah, and so what did you think of Tony Clifton? He's such an...
I thought he was a very good character to have in this film. And I think I learned more about Tony Clifton than I learned about Kaufman.
I know.
And I think the only thing that really confused me was like, is he dead or is he alive at the end? And
well,
like,
that's the thing.
And then playing R.E.M.'s Man on the Moon in
have
the
you
background.
Listened to that?
And yeah, it's a great song.
It's a really good song.
R.E.M.'s like, really good in general, honestly.
I know. So,
subtle plug.
R.E.M. did the song Man on the Moon in 1992, which is like 7 years before this movie came out. Really good, really good song. And I'm not sure if it won a Grammy or something. I can't really remember.
It might have.
I'd have to check. But
it's
then
it's a lot like Night Swimming, which is another song by R.E.M.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with R.E.M., but I should be, because like that was a really good
Rapid
song.
Rapid Eye Movement. They've also got What's the Frequency, Kenneth? Which is a great song. I think it's a little bit more obscure, but my mum loves that song.
Yeah, I really think I should like listen to more of...
They're great.
Yeah, so... So then they made the song The Great Beyond for this movie. Have you listened to The Great Beyond?
No.
That was nominated for...
Is that what's played in the background at the end of the film?
At the end of the song, it's Man on the Moon.
Yeah.
This movie just loves the song Man on the Moon, but it's just like, they never played The Great Beyond once.
I think the ending could have been done a bit better.
Yeah.
I think I would have preferred
it. It's an interesting ending with just having like Tony Clifton just saying, I will survive. It's a nice... uplifting enough ending.
But
so.
I think it would have been more interesting to have Paul Giamatti not in the audience. And you realise, like, when he says, you know, he says, like, Tony Clifton will work 10 years to pay it off, right?
Yeah.
It would have been, like, nice to think that, like, his friends were, like, supporting enough to let him have his big dream that they would have to work a long time after to, like, deal with it, rather than this weird, like, spooky dookie, you know, Kaufman never dies and Clifton will live on forever.
No, it's the kind of thing where, like, most people... Because Andy Kaufman was all about, like, trolling the audience, and you never knew what to expect from him. That's why he's one of my idols and, like, in my opinion, one of the best performers. You never actually knew what was coming with him. So that's the thing. People still think, although we have the death certificate and everything, Andy Kaufman is still alive somewhere.
He is. He's got to be.
No, because we've got the death certificate, and, like... I don't think it was cremated. I don't actually know, but like I'm pretty sure he's dead, but most people think it was a hoax.
He's definitely dead by now because it's like no, he was 30, born in like 20.
He was 35 when.
Oh, so he could still be.
Yeah, he was 35 when he died.
He'd
so
be like 90.
He's 60s, 75. So it's.
Oh, he's definitely in like Hawaii or something.
Yeah, that's the thing. I would like to believe he's just living his life. It's the kind of Elvis thing where people think Elvis is still alive. It's stupid, but you'd like to believe that these people are just living somewhere.
Or if not, Kaufman died and came back as Carrie.
Did you see the letterbox?
Definitely like, what happened.
Like, yeah, there's a nice letterbox review that like Andy Kaufman's not dead. He was resurrected as Jim Carrey.
Yeah, he changed his name.
He changed his name to Jim Carrey. It's just like he probably did. Let's be honest. Like
the energy from. Kind of Kaufman's work is definitely, I think if I was going to like summarize my review on this film, I'd say that this, well, the spirit, like spirit of Kaufman is there.
Yeah.
I think that it lacks the kind of respect for the artist that it needs in order to be a fully successful biopic. And it feels too much like they were trying to make a Jim Carrey flick out of like a serious topic.
That is very true. This is more an Andy Kaufman. This is more a Jim Carrey movie than an Andy Kaufman movie. And I feel that that's what a lot of people who don't like this movie like to say, that Jim Carrey was more interested in boosting it up his own ego. That's the thing why he like did all that method acting and stuff instead of really honoring the work of Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
And maybe, because have you seen the new film that came out? Saturday Night, I think it's just called Saturday Night Live.
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it. Who plays Kaufman in that?
Nicholas something, and I told you on YouTube there's this really cool thing where there's a side-by-side of Andy Kaufman, Jim Carrey, and Nicholas, I'd have to check what his surname is.
Saturday Night, the movie's called.
Yeah, Saturday Night, Nicholas Braun.
Oh, Gabrielle LaBelle's in this movie.
Yeah.
He was in The Fablemans, which is a brilliant movie. If you haven't seen it.
Was he the kid in The Fablemans?
Yeah, he was.
Oh my God, is he the main guy in this?
He's the main guy.
Oh my God, that's actually really cool.
Oh, he's Lorne Michaels.
Lorne Michaels, he was like the main guy.
He's got a great cast.
Saturday Night Live, yes.
Finn Wolfhard.
So maybe it's really good, you know.
It's got pretty good reviews.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with Saturday Night Live.
Oh, Dylan O'Brien's in this movie.
Yeah.
It's Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd's still alive, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, John Belushi. Yeah. And that's actually quite interesting to think about. John Belushi and Andy Kaufman both died when they were in their 30s, like during the 80s, and they were both on SNL. That's an interesting thing to think about, you know. Apparently, I'm not sure if his performance is even, if his performance is even closer to who Jim Carrey actually, to how
Nicholas
Andy Kaufman
Braun
was.
Plays Andy Kaufman and Jim Henson in Saturday Night. He plays two guys.
Jim Henson's in this, that's cool.
He plays two people in the same movie using prosthetics.
Now you see it, Jim Henson and Andy Kaufman were quite close, like in like how they sounded. Yeah, okay, that's quite cool. And yeah, so maybe his performance is even closer in that, but I just feel that this movie doesn't take enough liberties. Like apparently, like there's so many interesting stuff that happened in Andy Kaufman's actual life that it's just like they just did not touch on. Like apparently, like you saw the David Letterman thing,
yeah,
where like he him and Jerry the King Lawler have That thing entirely happened, like where he just like where Jerry the King Lawler just slaps him and he just falls over on his chair and he starts shouting on air, and the Fridays thing happened. But there's another interesting thing that happened where like on the dinosaurs, they do not look similar. But like something interesting happened on the dinosaurs show where like Jim Carrey would. On the actual show, live, he would crack eggs over her head, and Dinosaur, they got into a fight on live air. That would have been such an interesting thing to see in this movie, because Dinosaur, like, destroyed any copies of, like, that special, so nobody would, like, would have to see that, but that would have been such an interesting thing to recreate. So that's another missed opportunity. And apparently Andy Kaufman, like when he was, so what do you think of what's her name, Courtney Love in this movie?
I thought she's really unnecessary as a character. She kind of comes in plays a love interest that's in every single Jim Carrey movie, and then like basically is useless and yeah. then kind of leaves.
They do not do enough with her. And in real life, again, something interesting actually happened. Andy Kaufman was said to have slept around while he was in a relationship with her. He would sleep with other women at the same time. And it's like, wouldn't that be such an interesting thing to touch on during this movie? Talk about how she felt about that. And because in interviews, she's even said that it was a really hard thing to deal with, having him sleep around while being in the relationship at the exact same time. They just never touch on that during this movie. And I'm like, that's another really missed opportunity. There's so many missed opportunities in this movie that I just wish they'd take. And instead, they just do a lot of stuff that you could just see online. You can see the slap online. You can see the Mighty Mouse online. You can see like his performance at Carnegie Hall online. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. There's so many things that you could have done. They just don't do here.
It's still very enjoyable.
I enjoy it.
I think okay. my issue with yeah. it is if we're talking about kind of our serious Jim Carrey zone, I think it's not close enough to a Jim Carrey flick to be like shamelessly like it, like Truman Show.
Yeah.
And it's not far enough to be completely different, like Eternal Sunshine. Yeah,
it starts off really interesting, really different with the whole foreign
then
man.
It kind of fools
it. It just does generic biopic thing. And I don't know why it's like that. Because the writers were the ones who did Ed Wood, which is one of my favorite movies. And Ed Wood, just like Man on the Moon, takes a lot of liberties in terms of like what was real and what was not real. But somehow it still crafts a really interesting movie. And I don't know what happened with this one, where like it's still an interesting movie, but it's just, I'm not as fascinated. Like they're really good at doing biopics of really weird, really interesting people. You got Andy Kaufman and you got Ed Wood and you got Larry Flynn. Those are really interesting movie people. And I just don't feel they probably understood who like Andy Kaufman was enough in this movie. And which is really a shame, because it is really like, they're such good writers. And I really feel they could have done something with this. So yeah.
Doing a movie about Larry Flynn is quite,
that is a really good idea. I'm not,
and with Woody Harrelson.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I probably need to see it at some point, because it's just like, yeah, I don't exactly know what happened, but like, well, that's really interesting.
He's a weird guy.
Yeah, and they like Scott Alexander and
well, I feel like I'm very happy with them to take liberties if it's going to pay off.
Exactly, you know? It's a movie. I don't expect it to be the exact life of
like
a person.
Like Elvis, for example, is a good example.
Is it good?
Yeah, where they keep close enough for it to be realistic, but they do take, you know, they're not going to
I don't expect that. But when you're in this movie where it's like they take out stuff that you didn't need to take out, why would you take out him giving his child up for adoption? Or like him sleeping around? It makes him more of a human character. But in this movie, I feel it's more so like, they hold him like a holier-than-thou kind of person. Like, oh, Andy Kaufman was this genius, like, ahead of his time. And he was, but he still was a human, and he still had faults. And they don't touch on this enough during this movie. So, yeah, that's how I felt. And, so the writers, like, yeah, they wrote Problem Child and Problem Child 2. I'm going to stick by saying I really like Problem Child. It's really bad, but, like, it's still not... I still really enjoy it. Then they wrote, have you seen Goosebumps?
Yeah.
Yeah, they wrote Goosebumps.
Goosebumps, interesting.
It's interesting. It's not bad. I've not seen Dolomite Is My Name, but apparently that's very good as well. Yeah, I probably need to see that at some point. And they rewrote Mars Attacks. I just found that out yesterday, which was...
A remake?
They were uncredited, but they did some of the rewrites for Mars Attacks, which is something. Like, yeah, that's kind of random, but, you know, So,
what's your rating for Man on the Moon?
I don't know. It's a movie that I just can't pinpoint myself on. It does a lot of really good stuff. I haven't really touched. I've been doing a lot of criticizing on this movie. And I still really like it for what it is. If I ignore the fact that it doesn't touch on a lot of like Andy Kaufman, a lot of Andy Kaufman's stuff. And another thing, sorry, but
go ahead.
Another thing with this movie, with the great, when he reads The Great Gatsby, I don't like that scene. For the sake that, like, he does it in this movie as an act of kind of like, you know, they're not listening, you know, they don't understand me. I'm gonna read The Great Gatsby, see how they like it, and like, that's not how it was. And the reason Andy Kaufman read The Great Gatsby, not because he wanted like you know, protest against them, he just did it because it was funny. Like him reading in a British accent, reading The Great Gatsby, he just did that because it was funny. And this movie doesn't understand that. And at the beginning, you know where he gets fired?
Yeah.
The manager.
Yeah.
That was Andy Kaufman's actual manager.
Oh, so he's in the movie?
Yeah, and it's just like, it was Ben Shapiro, that's his name, and that was his actual manager. They don't even make a joke about that. They don't do anything with it.
I don't think you want to make a joke out of it.
No, because it's just like, huh.
It's just a nice little...
No, it's so random. Like, they don't understand. It wouldn't be so funny. Like, you have Danny DeVito, who's actually on Taxi with Andy Kaufman. Don't even make a joke about that. But he plays George Shapiro, and he's not, and George Shapiro is actually in this movie, but they don't even make a joke about that. Like, it's like there's so many missed opportunities with the movie, and I'm like, you were so close. They clearly understand where they need to go, but they really don't get it, and that's a problem with this movie. But
does Shapiro represent Steinfeld as well?
What?
Shapiro.
I'm not. Did he?
I think so.
I have no idea. I don't know that much about him. So, it's not Stein, it's Stein.
Seinfeld manager. George Shapiro. He manages Jerry Seinfeld. Fun fact.
Huh, okay.
Oh, poor Shapiro. He's dead now.
Yeah, but he was, like, quite old. Like, even at the time of Andy Kaufman, he was quite old. You know, like you even saw him, Man on the Moon. He looked pretty old.
Hang on.
And, you know, there's a lot of missed opportunities with this movie. After watching the Jim and Andy documentary, I've watched it like twice now. I'm like, damn, this movie is just... A lot of people went through a lot of stuff, and I don't really... And I do think some of it paid off. Some of it really doesn't pay off for me in this movie. You know, Jim Carrey's obviously giving a good performance, but I don't think, like, terrorizing the production, you did not need to do that to have a good performance. And, yeah, like, the directing is good, but, like, when the director made One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Amadeus, I just expect a little better from this as well. And you can tell by it didn't get any Oscar nominations. And, yeah, there's a lot of missed opportunities, but I still like it. It's still a good movie. It's not a bad movie, not by a long shot. So I would give it 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm going to go say it before. I think it's a very well done movie, but I think there was a lot of potential, and it feels a bit just random and kind of obscure.
Yeah.
And as I've touched on, I don't think Carrie was really doing much more than kind of Carrie.
Yeah. What did you think of the death scene where he finds out, not where he finds out he has lung cancer, but where he finds out, like, because he goes to, like, this place in Hawaii where, like, they do. Which is an actual thing that happened. No, because that is...
What were they, like, scratching on his body?
That is unfortunately what happened. You have these kind of doctors who say they can take out the cancer from you. And a lot of people go to that as a last resort, you know, hoping that they can cure them by taking the cancer out of their body.
What was he, like, pulling?
Apparently, I don't know for sure, but apparently, I don't know what they took out, or if they just put something in there and pretended they were taking something out, but it's a hoax. It's a complete hoax. And I do like how they...
He starts laughing.
Because for the first time, they have... he's always trying to trick people. For the first time, somebody else has tricked him. Which is really interesting, and he just starts laughing. It's such a weird cut, how it goes from him laughing to him being dead. And it's like, it's just weird, you know. And what did you think of the Carnegie Hall performance? Where, like,
I thought it was good. I thought, considering, obviously, it's probably not exactly what actually it was, but...
Oh, no.
I think it was, like, very faithful, I think. And it had, like, you know...
Yeah, like, no, all of that happened just in a weird order. They changed it around where, like, the Carnegie Hall performance came before he got cancer, but, like, they've changed it to after to make it a more happier occasion. And he actually did take the entire audience out for milk and cookies at the end.
Yeah, like, it's nice.
You know, it is, it is nice. It is a nice scene, which I do like. There are scenes I really like. It's just some things are really weirdly done in this movie that
but
just
they
don't
do reference
flow.
That at the beginning of the movie where he says like, yeah, I mixed all of it up and it's all baloney.
All baloney. And it's just like, yeah, I wish the entire movie was like that. A big troll movie where it's just like, it's just messing with the audience for the entire time with just like him, with like the movie cuts into black for 12 seconds. That is just weird. And but that really understands who Andy Kaufman was. And the rest of the movie, it's just kind of a bit of just, it's just a biopic for the rest of the movie and doesn't completely understand Kaufman. So, yeah, cool. Four or five.
Solid movie.
It's solid.
Puts it up there.
You know, just don't expect it to be exactly like the life of Andy Kaufman. You know, that's like, if you want to know about his life, read a book about him, you know, because his life, not gonna lie, it's more interesting than the movie. It is, you know, more interesting stuff actually happened. So, it's a good movie. I'm not going to deny it is a good movie. Yeah. So, 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5. Go and watch it.
Yeah, it
and
is good.
If you've
good.
Been listening to this and you haven't seen it, what are you doing?
Yeah, like,
go
you
and
should,
watch
don't,
it.
Don't
go watch it. It's on BBC iPlayer in England.
It's free.
It's on Amazon outside of England. Just go watch it, man.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. I've been Edward.
Yeah, I've been Noah.